What's up, EuroLeague fans? Welcome to, I usually say this, but today I truly mean it, a special episode of A Quarter with Kyle Hart. I think this may be a first time this may have happened to be an active player, interviewing the acting, leader of the league or the championship. So I guess we're making ground, we're making history here. But without further introduction, I would like to introduce the CEO of EuroLeague, Mr. Marshall Glickman. Marshall, thank you so much for taking the time.
Hey, thank you, Kyle. I've been waiting 6 months for this conversation, so I'm looking forward.
Yeah, like as we said before, man, this is long overdue, man. I'm definitely looking forward to having this conversation with you. I'll have an opportunity to get to know you a little bit more, and also, talk more about, some of the things and some of the great things and some of the things that might many people want to know more about EuroLeague.
Thanks.
So first off, I mean, you've been in EuroLeague now. You've been in office now for almost 6 months by the time this will be released. What is the state of EuroLeague in your opinion?
I think we have an incredibly bright future, and there's a lot of what I would call white space out there, or unlocked value. And I'm feeling really good about that opportunity, particularly in the growth markets, right? I think it's well known and understood that there is opportunity for basketball generally and EuroLeague specifically in Germany and in France and the UK. So that's a lot of our focus. But at the same time, we think there's opportunity to continue. And, Italy had a great tradition for many years. Right now, we got two clubs playing in EuroLeague in Italy. We'd like to continue to see our growth in that market. And so I'm just excited about the future based on the fact that in markets like Paris, London, Berlin, Milan, there's just so much upside.
Definitely. Now, from those that don't know, you've been either affiliated or even a consultant, and you've been working with EuroLeague for a long time, almost, I think, 2002 or something like that when you first started.
That's it. Yeah.
I'm just curious to know, from that point, you were working from the outside. Now you're internally. Now you're the boss. You're the man in charge that we talked about before. Is there something over the past 6 months that has surprised you about EuroLeague that you didn't know about, from the outside looking at it?
Politics. I mean, but I'm learning to navigate the politics. What's really, it depends how you look at it, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you could say that sometimes it's challenging what we're used to in the NBA is we make business decisions, right?
Right.
And the good thing about the NBA is typically the business decisions are about growing the league, which tends to benefit the owners and the players, both.
Absolutely.
And that's key. Here, it's a little different than that. And we have a mix of cultures. We have a mix of political systems. We have a mix of economic systems. And I would say what's interesting to me is a mix of mentality.
Yeah.
Because people that come from different places, different backgrounds, different experiences, think about things differently. And that's been, for me, the greatest challenge of this, but also the most fun in a way, because I'm picking up different nuances about different cultures. The cultural currents, if you will, create certain challenges, but also I think is one of the best things about EuroLeague. It's something that differentiates this from anything else. No matter how diverse the NBA is, and it is diverse, here, it's more diverse because our teams are across, 13 different countries, so it's fascinating. I like it.
Yeah, for me, that is the beauty of EuroLeague, right? That's the thing that I tell my friends and I tell people all the time. It's like, they ask me, what is it like to play in Europe? And I said, it's almost think about the NBA, but also think about the Travel Channel kind of merged together because, I'm playing basketball, I'm loving basketball. But we all also have all these other experiences outside of the court, whether or not it's just, immersing into different cultures, different languages.
Yep.
So my next question for you is, you're an outsider, you're living in Barcelona now, and you've been here for the last 6 months, but you're American. So for you, what has been the biggest challenge I'm not talking about coming to work every day, but just the biggest challenge is adjusting to life outside of basketball.
Probably getting our dog over here. I mean, I'm telling you, Kyle, my hat was
bitch out.
You know, and she's 14, so she's an old lady at this point. But no, I mean, listen, we lived here actually when I consulted with EuroLeague. Yeah. Although I wasn't an employee, I was for 2 years a full-time consultant and actually worked out of the offices when they were at the Palau Sant Jordi. So we've lived in Spain before, and I've been traveling back and forth to Europe, usually 7, 8, 9 times a year for the last really 20 years until COVID. And so we're used to travel. We're used to adventure. I've got a 22-year-old son back who's finishing the University of Oregon. He's a duck. A good duck. And, you know, but he's into music. He's a musician and a business guy. So he wants to be in the music business. And so he's got his eye on London as a way to kind of be in the vicinity of his parents, but not in where, you know, exactly where we are. So the adjustment for us from that point of view has been awesome. I mean, the lifestyle here is fantastic. Barcelona is a world-class city. You know, we're lucky. We get to go to London. We get to go to Paris. We get to go. I was in Dubai. We get to go all these cool places. And so there's been the transition. You know, I miss my family and my friends, like all of us who are expats that are over here. But yeah. No, it's that part's not been an issue at all. In fact, it's been a pleasure.
Yeah, nice. But in that way, that's something that you have in common with many of the players that you said that are playing in Europe. Like you said, yeah. Majority of us all kind of, you know, living abroad and kind of away from our family. So, you know, we talked about...
No, I was going to say, when I walked into the players' meeting, we have a players' meeting every year where there's one player from every team. Is that where you and I met? I think so.
Yep.
So there was a guy named, what's his name? Williams Goss player?
Yes.
Real Madrid, right?
Yeah.
So I walk up to him and I say, "Hi, I'm Marshall Glickman." He says, I know who you are." And I go, "Wow." He says, "I'm from Portland, Oregon." Yep. I absolutely couldn't believe it. So we got into a conversation. And by the way, Mike James is from Portland too.
You got it.
Okay. So there's a lot of Portland connections. Yeah. Anyway, I was asking him about kind of why he's here. Could he still be in the NBA? And he basically said, "I could make more or less the same money in the NBA, but I'm sitting. Here I'm playing. I have an important role on the team." But what really affected me was he said, "The real reason I'm here is my family and the opportunity to have this cultural experience." And I really appreciated hearing that, because most people think the players are only in it for the money, and it's not the case. I mean, everybody wants to make money. I want to make money. We all like money. But the fact that he's here also for the cultural side of it, knowing he could be probably in an NBA uniform right now, that really kind of struck with me.
Yeah, that's the most invaluable part about, like I said, playing over in Europe is not only us, but, you know, our family, you know, our children, my parents. Like, I don't think my parents would have a passport if it wasn't by how they played overseas. So, my mom just left. You know, she just left, and she was in Venice, she was in Como, and she was in Milan. So I think that's right. part about it.
Yeah, that's great.
Now, you talked about your conversation with William Goss, and you mentioned Mike James, and, you know, to kind of tell a story, you know, after we played Barcelona, I looked at my phone and I received a text message from you, right? And I was surprised, because I'm not expecting, you know, the CEO of EuroLeague to, you know, send a text message just to say hello. And I'm curious to know, you know, is it important for you to build a personal relationship, you know, with the players? Because not all CEOs, not all commissioners, not all people of position of power will want to do that. So why is it important for you to, you know, to have these personal relationships with the players and, you know, develop these kind of relationships with the players?
Well, the players are at the core of everything. I mean, that would be, I think it would be wrong not to want to reach out and build relationships and understand. You know, I've worked a lot as a consultant in Europe with all kinds of sports organizations, especially football.
Yeah.
I've worked with La Liga. I worked with Ligue 1 in France before that. I worked with the French Tennis Federation. And I noticed that decisions are being taken generally by men, who are up there in years. Generally by men who are Caucasian, mm-hmm. you know, and I'm looking and I was saying, wait a minute, you know, who's making the decisions here? And to what extent are the people that are most affected by our decisions having a voice in our decisions? So to me, hearing from and understanding and being sensitive to the journey that players are going through is critically important to any decision that we make. And I mean that with all sincerity. I've always had that perspective. And I worked for the NBA at the league office back in the 80s when the NBA league office was, I think, 52 people. Okay. Yep. And because of that, I was pretty close with Commissioner Stern back in the day. And he taught me this, right? David, you know, is not, you know, he's a different, you know, guy, but he got very close to a lot of his players. And I remember when he embraced Allen Iverson, you know, who walked in covered with tattoos and, you know, was bringing, you know, the street look. Yeah. And David, instead of being this old guy who was like, had some kind of intimidation of the street, you know, cred that Allen brought, he embraced it. He understood it. He understood that fashion and all that comes with that, you know, kind of the hip hop generation, man.
Yeah.
He said, let's go, let's go, let's take that. And I always took that as being important. And, you know, the tastes and the, you know, what the players are going to over the years, right? They change with the generations. And it's very important that we stay current with the generations. And this is why I've put a lot of focus on really focusing on Gen Z. You know, people say millennials. Well, millennials, they're old now. I mean, it's really Gen Z. And then Alpha, Generation Alpha is behind Gen Z. My kid's 22, so I think he's just Gen Z. I'll be honest with you. I listen to my kid more than anybody because he's a hoop junkie.
Yeah.
And when I first came here, he had a hard time watching EuroLeague games because he's used to watching all the NBA razzle-dazzle. I made him watch EuroLeague games because I said, dude, you got to watch EuroLeague games. And now he's getting it. He's getting this whole every game matters thing because it's true. It's a real thing. It's like every game is actually intense, a lot on the line. He feels it. And I brought him when he was here to a game, and then I took him to Belgrade. And he got to go to a Partizan game and feel what that was all about.
And after that,
right? I mean, he's a convert, man. He's a convert. It tells me there's French kids and there's Italian kids and there's English kids that are going to have the same sensitivities because the, you know, the iPhone made the world a lot smaller, didn't it?
Definitely. Now, you mentioned before, and kind of on the same topic, but you mentioned before how you want EuroLeague to be a players' league where the players are the protagonists and they're the main feature. So my first question is, first of all, like you talked about mentality, and I know that the mentality of EuroLeague or just European sports in general, there's not a lot of player first in it, you know, just because of the way the players are, just because of the way the culture is. You know, you're not going to see, you know, Mike James or Shane Larkin doing the gritty or doing the Stephen Curry shimmy without, you know, maybe a Tudors or Bobrovich saying something to them, right? So my question to you is, when you say all those things about being a players' league, what is the feedback that you have received, you know, from the coaches, from the fans, from the, I guess you mean say, from the, you know, old guard people that have the mentality about that?
Well, I've had some pushback, you know, right? You know, I'm committed to this being a players' league. That is not and should not be taken offensively by any coaches or, you know, let's say people that have been in and around the game for a long time. I completely respect the role that coaches play here. It's different than in the NBA, right?
Yeah.
Where, you know, where maybe the, you know, the pendulum is really swung to the player's side, which is fine. That's the nature of the NBA. I'm not suggesting that, you know, I think there's a balance because the fact that this is a more, you tell me, but it feels like our game here is more tactical and more strategic.
Definitely.
And that obviously is a reflection on the brilliance of many of our coaches. And I think that's something that is important to respect and understand. At the same time, as a commercial product, the fans aren't playing to see the coaches coach. They're playing to see the players play. And the players are people. They're not just robots shooting basketballs. The players are people. And why the NBA is the NBA is because of that.
Yeah.
And I do think the people that are here, the 28% of our players that are Americans, the balance of our players that are European mostly, but from all over the world, so many of the European players that have gone to the States and then come back here, the journey is so fascinating. And so to me, it's really important when I say it's a players' league, things like what we're doing right now are really important. Yep. I need, you know, to the extent that the players want to expose themselves, right? Not all players want that. Some people just want privacy. But to the extent that players are willing to kind of bare themselves a little bit and let their personalities and their voices come out more, I think that's good for us. I think that's good for business, and I think that's what my 22-year-old son and all his compatriots in Europe want. They want to understand, who's Kyle Hines, man? What's his deal? What's his journey? What does he think? What does he care about? So to me, that's just as important as how you do out on the court.
Now, the part two of that question is, what can players do to help in that regard? You know, what can we do? Is it more, is it social media? Is it us doing TikTok dances? Like, you're thinking, like, what is it? What is it that, when that's a players that what did players need to do?
Well, more of this, I would say. And but it's not only more of this. We need, you know, I mean, I am dying to do the EuroLeague version of Drive to Survive, right?
Yeah.
You know, right? I mean, I'm dying to. But, you know, it means that we have crews with microphones that are going to have to intrude a bit on people's lives. And that can only work if people are willing to allow that and trust. That creates, you got to have trust, right? Because, you know, having cameras following you around all day isn't always comfortable. Mm-hmm. And it does mean that we need the coaches and the general managers and the presidents and the owners to also trust and also understand that we're trying to share the journey with other people. So I think the players can speak up and as a collectively to make sure that the people that they're working with within the clubs understand that this is more than a game to you, and there's other aspects that you want to be able to take advantage of. And so it's not something that's going to happen overnight, right? There are definitely, you know, there is a bit of a clash of old school and new school. I think it's beginning to change. I'm feeling more cooperation, frankly, you know, and in fact, Etudis called me recently, so, you know. I mean, you know, look, you know, and I had dinner, by the way, with your coach when he was here. So I'm trying to reach out, understand I'm here to help. My job is to grow the business. And that's not only a money issue. I know people might think that's only about money. It is partially about money, but it's not only about money. I'm trying to grow the popularity of basketball in Europe and the relevance of EuroLeague in the broader basketball ecosystem. I think EuroLeague is really underappreciated in some parts, especially in the States, by the way.
I mean,
I had a friend from the NBA, an NBA veteran guy, tell me, who's helping us now on some things, who told me EuroLeague is the best kept secret, you know, in basketball.
Yeah,
Yeah.
I've been saying that for a long time. My friends have been saying that for a long time. Like,
yeah.
Anybody that's like watched the game or gone to a Final Four, yeah, like, this is, or go to a quarters on or these type of games. But
right.
Why does not the, why does the world know about this?
Well, I'm going to do everything I can to change that kind of way of seeing it. I need help from you and your fellow players. I need help from the coaches. I need help from the general managers. So I'm spending a lot of time talking to people, trying to build relationships and trust with people to get people to open up a little bit. I mean, you know, the game is taken so seriously over here, man. It's a game, man. It's a game. You know, it's a game. And, you know, we're all hoop people. Like, we like hoops. Like, I want to put, you know, go, let's ball.
Yeah.
And I want people to see that. And it's a special brand here because every game does matter, and because I think of the cultural diversity. I think those are our two biggest you know, kind of differentiators, and it's a positive.
Definitely. I agree. I definitely agree. Now, while you're doing that, you also have the president, who is one of the most respected, you know, players in EuroLeague history, Mr. Dejan Mudryavuoglu. Now, my question is, what is it like to have, you know, such a respected, you know, player, respected EuroLeague player, you know, as almost like as your counsel to also help you? And then also the second part is that, do you see more former players taking leadership positions or positions in EuroLeague to help? Question.
What are you going to do after you retire, Kyle?
I have no idea.
I can't wait to have this conversation. So the answer is yes, yeah. Very much so. I'd like to see a lot more of that. Dejan's been terrific. Dejan is, when I lived here from 2002 to 2004, so he's playing for Barca mm-hmm. with Saras.
Uh-huh.
And let's see, Pesic was the coach, Marco's yep. father,
yep.
and who's Marco's the GM, managing director at Bayern Munich basketball. And, you know, so he was a lovely player to watch. He was kind of a Larry Bird type of player, right? In terms yeah. of, he had a whole, yeah, he kind of did everything, right?
He had the full package.
Exactly, you know, and he was a sneaky player. I liked him. Anyway, it's been really cool because he comes from that, you know, from that Balkans core, yeah. right? And that's a certain mentality and a certain perspective, but it's important that I understand that. Like, because I came in here as a business guy going, well, there's not that many people in Belgrade. And he said, oh, no, you wait. And so then he convinced me to get on an airplane right after Christmas with my wife and with my son who was here visiting and come to Belgrade. And first of all, we had an awesome time together because he's got a beauty. His wife is terrific. And his son, we met his son. And we broke bread, and he's got a great restaurant there. I will say the food was fantastic. But we also had other, you know, we had time together, and I got to kind of feel that. And it is correct to say that not every decision should be, you know, not every decision should be a money decision. In this case, this is a really core basketball hub. It's a global hub of basketball. I would argue that Belgrade is on par with, you know, New York City, man. I mean, right? They love their ball there.
Yeah.
And so that's cool. And the passion that comes out is a really important part of the mix as well. So it's been great. Dejan is in the office a lot, and we talk, and having him as a counselor is fantastic. And I think it sets up this whole idea, right, Kyle, that you want players.
Speaking of the players, this is probably one of the bigger issues of the players, and that is the relationship with FIBA, the FIBA windows. You know, I've asked many guys, and this is probably the biggest conversation, the biggest topic in, you know, in locker room. So I don't want to get into it too much with you, but I just want to know, are you optimistic about, you know, the relationship and the conversation that you eventually have with FIBA? And what do you look forward to in the future talks with FIBA?
We had a get to know you session, and then we're going to have a more substantive session coming up, I think, in March. It was a very productive get to know you. I got some good tips on skiing in France during that meeting. So, you know, it was nice. Listen, there's a European basketball ecosystem. There's EuroLeague, there's EuroCup. There's the Basketball Champions League, and I think there's actually a fourth, another European. So you got four different European competitions. You got domestic leagues. Each one of the domestic leagues also has a cup competition, right? And then FIBA has qualifying tournaments in the middle of our season. And, you know, I understand. I mean, listen, who doesn't want to support their national teams? And, you know, people want to play for their countries, and this is important. So, you know, and there's 365 days in the year. And last I checked, players sometimes need to chill.
Yeah.
Right?
A little bit.
Just a little chill, man. It's like no practice, no nothing. I just need to chill. And I need to see my family. And I need to do something that's not basketball related every second of every day of the week. So, you know, it's not an easy puzzle to solve. Admittedly, it's a very complex puzzle. Everybody has their own interests, both commercial interests and other. I happen to be optimistic. I think we can solve it. I think there's a really good attitude about it. I've got a group of clubs that's working with me and Dayon together, and I feel like we're going to find a breakthrough with FIBA. I can't say for sure, but I can tell you we're going to make every effort to do so, because I think sorting out that there's too much, you know, and I think sorting it out is really important for everybody's interest.
Definitely. Another big issue, as you just mentioned a little bit before, is the calendar. Obviously, you know, we can't create, you know, more days of the year. We can't create, you know, an extended calendar. But with that, knowing that, you know, one of the issues with the calendar and with the schedule that I think that players want to see is the travel and how we travel. And I think it's something that's come up in the WNBA and also, you know, here in your league, just in Europe, about trying to develop a charter program or some type of program where it makes it a little bit easier. I just want to know, what are your thoughts about that? And, you know, is that something that is also, you know, a priority or on the list is, you know, what, you know, moving forward?
It's a priority for sure, particularly if we're going to try to jam more games into the schedule, then it's a real priority. But I would say it is a priority. There's a lot more chartering now, right, Kyle, than there used to be. And so that's very helpful. But I remember, so the answer to your question is, yes, it's a priority. It's a question of resources. It's a lot more expensive to fly that way, which tells me, to me, the way I see that is, let's grow this thing. Players, coaches, presidents, owners, league office, partners, let's just grow this thing. If we can grow, and it's not that hard. I really believe in, you know, I'm not saying everything's going to happen overnight, but I think in a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 year window, we can really grow the economy. And it's not like we're going to stuff everybody's pockets with money. We can start investing in having the resources to do things, because we need to take care of our players. And we need to make sure that travel is comfortable and convenient. And I know what it is. Believe me, I travel a lot, but it's not the way you guys travel. And plus, you guys are usually taller than me. It's not convenient to go through commercial airports, you know, and particularly, you know, when you got to play another game, you know, coming right up. So I get it. It's something that we are looking into. We've looked at charter programs over many years. It's not a new issue. We need to find a solution, and we're trying to find a solution.
Now, Dubai, London, you already mentioned Paris. These are some of the, you know, some of the places that you guys are looking to, looking at some of these new markets. So the first question I have is, do you have any update on those, which I think for players it would definitely be a benefit, because obviously, you know, we would have more games, but if there's more teams, then there's more opportunities for more players to play in Europe.
There you go.
We not only have 18, we have, you know, possibly 20. So like I said, it's playing in EuroLeague is even sometimes more of a luxury than playing in the NBA, because we only have 18 teams, and sometimes it's, you know, from year to year, you don't necessarily know. But do you have any updates on, you know, a Dubai or a London or a Paris situation? And besides those, what other market is EuroLeague as a business looking into?
Dubai, we're in active discussions. I can't say whether that will result. I mean, Dubai is complicated, right? There's no team there. There's no league there. There is a nice arena, and there are people there, but most of the people aren't from there, and there's no basketball culture there. That being said, there is a passion by this group, the Dubai Basketball Club, to make this happen, which we really appreciate. They've been terrific. So we're, you know, and it's a long flight, okay? It just is a really long flight. But I think there's a lot of sentiment that it would be a cool place to go. What I like about it is the idea of a European team sport, a league actually expanding into the Gulf states in the Middle East. That, just the sort of the political implication. You know, remember, Israel's in our league, and to me, that sort of makes a statement of friendship and peace that I like. So I think we're all interested and attractive. We're trying to make it work, and if we can make it work, we will, but I don't know what the outcome's going to be. London, the London Lions, who are owned by Americans out of Miami, Florida, are doing a terrific job at the Euro Cup level. They really are. I mean, I was at a game not long ago, and it was full. They were playing a domestic league game against Sheffield on a Sunday at 4 p.m. The place was packed. There was enthusiasm, not the kind of enthusiasm that you'll get in Athens or in Belgrade, but a different kind of enthusiasm because people didn't know the game the same way. They haven't grown up with the game, but people were really into it and happy to be there. It was a very cool experience. So this group that owns this team is really dedicated, committed. Paris, we actually have two different parties that are pursuing EuroLeague teams. So I think we're going to oh, and then Monaco. Now, Monaco's in the league right now, but they're in the league because of sports results, and maybe or maybe we don't know what the where they're going to finish this year. But there is a potential project for a new arena, believe it or not, in Monaco. And if that were to happen, then that becomes interesting. So, I mean, you know, I see us expanding. I can't say exactly when. I can't say exactly where. We like the project in Bologna. You asked me about other markets. They're in the league right now, but to stay in the league long term, you know, they need a venue. But I'm hearing good things that may happen. I'm coming. I'm going to come in, I think, April. Mm-hmm. And so there's interest there. If pray God the Russians at some point are back in, and you know, St. Petersburg, you had mentioned earlier, that's an interesting market, right? We've been there kind of before. I've been to St. Petersburg once. Oh, very beautiful city.
Beautiful city.
Yeah. Yeah. And so there's kind of interest there. And then I think, you know, in Valencia, I shouldn't overlook Valencia, who's also in the league right now, but they're in the league by virtue of a wild card because CSKA is not playing right now. But they've got a beautiful new arena that's going to be completed next year. So there's interest that way. I also think, finally, Kyle, I think there's a day, it may be 5 years from now, when we can put basketball in markets that you wouldn't think of.
Yeah.
Whether that's a Manchester, England, or a Helsinki, Finland, or an Amsterdam. You know, the NHL in the States, hockey, went to Nashville, they went to Tampa, they went to Phoenix. They're doing great in these markets.
Yeah. And they went there, and they kind of went there first.
Exactly. So sometimes you need to come build the market, grow the market, work the market, have grassroots programs, get your players out front, and it can work. And so I'm very optimistic. You know, I know football's king in Europe, and football will always be, I suppose, king. You could say the same about the NFL in the States, but that doesn't mean that the NBA is not a massively successful operation. It is, and that does, so even though football's king, it doesn't mean that we can't be massively successful, and especially if we can capture the hearts and the minds of young adults.
Definitely. What about, you know, the relationship with ALPA and EuroLeague? Obviously, we've had part of the ALPA, I guess you could say, contingent or group, but we've had the historical framework agreement, you know, I guess ratified this past year. So, you know, what can you speak on the relationship of ALPA and EuroLeague and why ALPA is important, you know, for EuroLeague as a whole, and where do you see the future talks, you know, with ALPA, you know, moving forward?
So we just broke bread over lunch. I think it was 3 days ago. I was with Bogey. He's a really good guy. He's young, so he's got a young person sort of sensitivity.
Yeah.
You know, he played in the NBA. He played, you know, in here, so he kind of gets both sides of it. So I really liked his attitude. And, you know, my view is, what I've told him is, look, the way this really needs to, the big breakthrough with the collective bargaining agreement in the NBA, so I'll use that as a reference, and I'm talking way back at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it took a lot of very tough and sometimes adversarial, contentious negotiations to get to this place. You know, remember, you had Larry Fleischer, who's famous representing the players, David Stern and his guys. I mean, you know, these guys, they knew how to, you know, go at each other, right? But then what was cool about it is then they'd go out to dinner, you know, right? It never crossed that personal line. But anyway, the biggest breakthrough in the, you know, the CBA with the players has been changed, modified, ratified, all kinds of changes over the years. But fundamentally, I don't like even the term salary cap. It's not a salary cap. It's also, it's a partnership with the players is what it is. And the fact is, every time another dollar comes into the ecosystem, the players benefit financially.
Definitely.
But it's more than that. It's deeper than that, right? It's also, look what's happened to their travel conditions are unbelievable, right? The practice facilities, the food and the nutrition and the physiotherapy and the mental health side of the game and the resources available for that are incredible, right? So it's really raised the bar so much to where now the players and the owners are really on the same page. Doesn't mean there's never disagreements, but they're generally working together and aligned on what this is all about. And I'm a capitalist. It's partially about money, but it's not only about money. I love the fact that the NBA has encouraged the players to have a voice and to use platforms and speak up and speak out and have made that possible, the WNBA too. So I think there's other sides to it that people don't always see. The players have influence, right? Whether they want the influence or not, they have influence. And so the vast majority of players have channeled that influence and used their platforms in positive ways to encourage positivity, whether it's health, nutrition, whether it's political, it doesn't matter. So I think there needs to be more talk with ELPA about that. How can we work together to make this really a partnership so that as much as possible, our interests are aligned? And that's, to me, what this is all about. So when we talk about financial fair play, how can we modify and tweak and refine that system so that the players are incentivized, we're incentivized to make it better for the players, players are incentivized to make it better for the owners, and we're aligned. That's
what I'm interested in. I agree. I think that the biggest thing for players, and we can go on and on about this, and I won't go too in-depth, but I think is about players needing to be stakeholders, needing to have some type of stakeholders in the business, in the company. And I think once players are stakeholders and they see that, if they post more, if they do more, if they speak more about EuroLeague, then it's going to generate more for EuroLeague, which in this time is going to generate more for them as well. Yep.
No, I agree with that in principle, and it's not going to be simple, right? I'm not suggesting it's simple, but, and you know, we have a unique, in the NBA, the owners are people.
Yeah.
Over here, it's not always a person who's the owner. Yeah. And you play for a club that there's a person that we can identify, and he's the one of the greatest fashion designers in the history of the world. Yeah. So that makes it kind of double cool. But that's not always the case. We got clubs that are owned by football teams. So that means that, you know, Barca, Real Madrid are basically owned by socios, all these members, right? So the president, Jean Laporta and Florentino Perez, have to listen to the socios, right? Because they're the real deciders. So the situation's different in different countries, and that's why over here it makes it a little more complicated sometimes. But I think we're getting there. I think we have some real good ideas, and I'm looking forward. We have a great team of people that are talking to Boki, all the time. And I think the more we work together, the more we communicate, we'll find solutions. I got an email from Boki the other day. I'm not going to reveal what it said, but it was like, I said, dude, breakthrough thinking. Right on, man. I mean, because he came up with something that was completely out of the box for Europe, and I loved it. And it's like, hey, man, how do we make this work?
That's great. That's great. Now, we talked about moving forward. Coming up very soon, or not very soon, but soon enough, will be your first Final Four as CEO of EuroLeague. It's going to be in a beautiful arena in Kaunas, Lithuania, home of Žalgiris. So the Final Four is always a special event. I mean, I've been lucky enough. I've been to a few of them, participated in a few of them. And my friends and my family, they love it. You know, like you said, with your son going to Partizan games, and, you know, after that, he was kind of full. And that's the way it's kind of been for my family and my friends. They go to a Final Four, and it's like, wow, like, this is the best experience ever.
Awesome.
So for you, being that this is your first, you know, Final Four, what are you looking forward to with the Final Four? And are we going to expect any, you know, different changes or anything, you know, different? You know, with this upcoming Final Four?
Well, I hope so, because I've shared my perspectives anyway with the people that are working on it every day. So I'm going to be just as surprised as everybody else. It's not sort of my day-to-day role. But listen, we're going into a basketball-crazy country. I've been to Kaunas a few times. It's a beautiful city. It's close to Vilnius, which is a bigger, beautiful city. So some people are going to have to shuttle back and forth. There's not enough hotel rooms. It's like, wow, what a great problem to have. We don't have enough so I guess we're kind of a big event, right? We don't have enough hotel rooms. I love that problem. NBA All-Star doesn't have enough hotel rooms either. So, okay. Yeah. So we'll deal with that. So I'm super excited about it. I know that they're really enthusiastic about it there. The Fan Fest, which is started off as kind of small, has gotten better and better and grown more and more. And I think that's a big opportunity for us. I want to see that stretch out. I want to see music. I want to see fashion. I want to see gastronomy, you know, kind of those to me, and, you know, yoga. I mean, I want to see more culture brought into, kind of blended with basketball, right? So to me, that's super cool. I mean, one thing we did in Portland, we used to have fashion shows with players and their wives.
Yeah.
And it was like, it was unbelievable. And, you know, and at a certain point, when David Stern, by the way, remember when he passed the rule making the coaches or the players, when they were hurt, had to wear suits?
Yeah.
And this was very controversial. The players said, no, what?
Allen Iverson.
Right. But you know what it turned into? A fashion show. Which was super cool. And the players started, their sort of form of protest is, okay, Mr. Stern, I'll wear a suit, but you need to check out the suit that I'm going to wear, man. It's not off the rack from Nordstrom's. I'm telling you that right now. And it became really cool. And that added a whole nother layer for people of, you know, it made my wife interested, right? What is he going to wear? What is his wife wearing? You know, so this is good. And I think we can bring a little bit of that, not, you know, to overdo the American thing, but I think we can bring some of that into the Final Four.
I have one more question before we get into our quick shot questions. They're good questions, but they're good. This last question, which I think is probably the best one. What do you want your legacy in your league to be?
Damn, Kyle, I should have gotten a preview on this, man. This is rough. Are we live? You may have to edit this. The man who was here before me, Jordi Bertomeu, is a friend of mine and somebody I respect deeply. He started something that seemed impossible, really, at the beginning. And so it's kind of, you know, and I came here, by the way, with his blessing, and it was really important to me to have that, and I wouldn't have come otherwise. So my hope is that I can help shepherd this league into, you know, the future. And I hope that the legacy is that we grew the league and we helped popularize basketball across the continent and maybe outside the continent too. And I want, you know, I mean, I have a self-interest. I want American kids to be talking about EuroLeague the way, not, you know, that they talk about the NBA. I want, hey man, who's Kyle Hines? I want people in the States to know who is Kyle Hines. I mean, I'll be just straight up, right? You know, they kind of know Mike James because he had he played with Kevin and he had a few, he had a few good games for the Nets a couple of years ago. He had a couple of big games and so he got some headlines, right? But it's like, who are these guys? It's not just about the Americans, right? It's both ways. And so, but I want to help stabilize the situation. I want to keep the clubs aligned, unified, working together. And I want to forge better partnership with players. I think that's the core thing I hope I'm remembered for, legacy. I never thought about legacy, Quacky. That's fair.
Trying to pull one out of my pocket on you.
That's good, man.
Now we're going to go into our quick clutch time question. So I know that you're a vinyl collector, right? Of music, and you talk about your son. So my question is, you know, you're just coming home from a great day. What is your go-to vinyl record or vinyl song that you put on?
Duran Jones and the Indications, Love Will Find a Way.
Nice. Okay.
You know this? You know Duran Jones?
Yes.
Old school, man.
My best friend is really into music. He's really into jazz. He's really into like classic rock and roll and stuff like that. So he's a vinyl collector as well. So he's always sending me these links to these songs. And every time I'm in his car, we don't listen to anything from today. We listen to a bunch of stuff from the past. So he definitely knows. So I definitely know. Now, you've been traveling all over Europe and all over the world with your, you know, with your former company or your current company with G2. So what is your favorite meal that you've had?
Oh, dude. This isn't, there's just no way. I mean, first of all, I'm overweight, which is, you know, it's been a pleasure becoming overweight, but not a pleasure being overweight. I'm trying to get to the gym. This job is making it a little hard to get to the gym sometimes, but I am doing my best. I have had so many amazing meals, but my wife recently and I were recently in Paris, and I can't remember the name of the restaurant, but we went to one of those classic Paris, you know, amazing ornate bistros, but they serve very traditional French dishes. Yeah. And, you know, I'm a cheese freak, which is bad for the waistline, but I just love French cheeses, and the stinkier, the better. Okay. Yeah.
Now, for those that don't know, your father was the founder of the Portland Trailblazers.
That's
so
true.
You've been around basketball and sports for a whole entire life. So I'm curious to know, what is your favorite sports memory that you were a part of?
Trailblazers winning the championship in 1987. And that's because we were down 2-0 and we won 4 in a row over Julius Erving and the 76ers to win that.
I'm a Philly guy, so I know.
So you know exactly. All right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the thing about that was, it wasn't, you know, we had Walton, we had Luke, but it wasn't really a superstar deal. It was five and a couple more off the bench, kind of really, I've never seen a blending of players that kind of, it just kind of all came together. But then the moment was what happened afterwards, because we only won that last game by 2 points. And this is a small, relatively small city, you know, it's, you know, and I mean, the city went crazy and all positivity. It was all positivity. I've never seen anything like it in my life. 1 million people in Portland, that's more people than live there. And they flooded into a parade situation. Now I'm going to get to the answer. The moment was Bill Walton standing next to Neil Goldschmidt, the mayor of Portland, and taking a beer and pouring it over his head. This was the moment. And it was awesome.
That should be, that sounds like an amazing moment. It sounds like an amazing time.
Yeah.
So, two more questions. I know you've been part of EuroLeague since 2002, but I just have a question. Do you have a favorite EuroLeague moment?
Yeah, the first Final Four I was at. I couldn't believe it. First Final Four I was at was right here in Barcelona. They won. I didn't know what the Final Four was. And just so you know, when Jordi Bertomeu called me the first time and said, "Hi, I'm Jordi from EuroLeague," I said, "What is EuroLeague?" Okay. And here I am, the CEO of EuroLeague today. It's amazing. But I went to the Final Four. I'm going to try to remember. I think it was 2003. I'm going to say somebody's going to fix my my background on this. And in the Palau Sant Jordi. And this place was on fire. It was, I don't mean literally on fire. I mean, the energy of the place was something I had never experienced before, not in any sport, not at a Super Bowl, not in an NBA final. It was just the passion. And then I realized what it was. You had people from Greece. You had people from Italy. You had people from Spain. You know, people travel, right? This is something that happens in college football in the States. It does not happen in NBA basketball. It doesn't. And so that was really like turned me on to this thing. It was cool.
Definitely. The last one I have for you is kind of a simple one, but it's this: what would your message be to the fans? And we talk about the players, we talk about the coaches, we talk about the clubs, but to me, the thing that separates your league from all other leagues in the whole entire world is the fans. So to close this out, you know, CEO of your league, what would your message be to the fans?
My message would be, to spread the gospel. Help us spread the gospel, because in your league, it's true, every game matters, and that's something very different. And so I'm really proud of that. I feel very honored to be here to help. And I've said I'm a player first guy, but what I should have said, and I'll correct it now. I'm a fan first guy, and I really am, and it's always been about that for me.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time. Obviously, I know you're a very busy man with, you know, a lot of things, different things going on. It was a pleasure to have finally have this conversation, and look forward to having, you know, more conversations with you in the future. And thank you so much.
I can't wait to have dinner in Milan.
Definitely. EuroLeague fans, thank you so much. Usually we go 10 minutes and that's a quarter, but today we won a full game plus a couple overtimes because special guest with Mr. Marshall Blitzman. Thank you so much for taking the time to watch this episode. Look forward to many more episodes coming very soon, and I'll see you very soon. Take care.
Thanks, Kyle.